It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
And he's going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense's Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
And he takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzine takes the snap. Pass
intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. That's your telephone number if you want to join us. Talk some New York Giants football. The training camp period for the Giants is officially at an end, which means fans no longer have access to practice, so don't come down. You're going to be wasting your time. But obviously, two more preseason games after the one this weekend. Preseason game number 2 for the rest of the NFL. Preseason game number 3 for the New York Football Giants. They travel to Indianapolis to take on the Colts. Site of Super Bowl 46 to get to see a couple of old buddies, Ahmad Bradshaw, Akeem Nix. And some news yesterday, and four guys will focus on. I know a big topic on yesterday's show was Will Beatty, as we talked about. He will end up playing in that game on Saturday. And Lance, Will Beatty did speak to the media yesterday and basically said what we expected he would, in that, look, the leg isn't 100% in that it is the same level of strength as his healthy leg. However, he's not in a situation where the one leg has any more chance of getting hurt than the other. So now it's just a matter of building up strength and getting the strength back. But otherwise, the leg is healthy enough to play. He can do everything he needs to do on the football field.
Well, he's been out there during practice every day. So yeah, clearly it's not lingering so much that he can't move and he doesn't have enough versatility to go up against JPP every day in practice. The other thing that I took away was the fact that he realizes, and we were talking about this a great deal leading up to this preseason game, he needs a number of reps in game action, yeah, John, before he can go out there week one against the Lions. You can't just assume that he's going to practice every day and all of a sudden that's going to translate to the football field.
And to me, this is even more important. And look, getting Will Beatty healthy is obviously step number one. But Will Beatty was healthy last year and he stunk. So getting Will Beatty healthy back is great. Getting Will Beatty healthy and him playing well is really all that matters. If he's healthy and he plays like he did last year, guess what? People are going to want him injured again. So, you know, he's
I don't know. Charles Brown is next on the list, John.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's an excellent point. Fair point, but I think you would see the Pugh left tackle experiment be instituted pretty quickly if Beatty was out for a long period of time. Bottom line here, Lance, Will Beatty doesn't have to play. He's got to play well.
Absolutely. He needs to be an effective left tackle. You're not asking him to be a Pro Bowl left tackle, even though the money does call for that. You want him to be a solid offensive lineman. That's what you want. Consistency in pass protection, consistency in run blocking. If you could get the 2012 Beatty back, hey, the Giants will take that. The fan base will take that. But right now, we've got to see a taste of it in the preseason, because you can't feel as if all of a sudden things are going to click in the regular season. He needs to get this game action. And even if he goes out there, John, on Saturday for 15 to 20 snaps, which is probably a realistic number,
yeah,
that
sure,
to me is a step in the right direction.
Oh, no question
huge
about
step
it. And it's certainly a good thing to get him back on the field to build some chemistry with Jeff Schwartz, someone he hasn't played in a game with before. Center J.D. Walton, someone he hasn't played in a game with before. So it'll be very important for him to get out there. That's number one. Number two, Tremaine McBride will play. And this is a guy, Lance, frankly, that I think, barring an injury right now, is a lock for this roster. That's how good he's been in practice. I think it's pretty clear he's the fourth or fifth best cornerback on this roster after the top three guys. You could throw Bowman into the mix there too. But I think McBride's actually had a better camp than Zach Bowman has. So to me, he's on this roster. But it's good for him to get out there, play with that hip in a game situation, and get ready to move forward.
Take a hit or two. I mean, that's the key whenever you're coming off of off-season surgery, you're coming off of an injury. But I agree with you, John. Of all the players who has yet to play in a game, he's actually still made his impact.
Oh, yeah.
Because you watch practice each and every day, and he's either getting an interception or he's hustling to make a tackle. So that, to me, is something that has really stood out. And it's just another example of how deep this secondary is. Walter Thurmond spoke about this yesterday. Antrell Roll has talked about it.
Dominique Rogers-Cromartie talked about
it. They all mention it. And we sound like broken records. records, but you know what? There is validity behind that. If you look at how many corners are on this team and how many corners actually can make an impact in a game, it's pretty scary, and that should bode well for this team.
And in fact, how well this defensive secondary is playing in practice, and Bob Pop and I were talking about this the other day, we've seen more interceptions in this training camp than we've ever seen in any training camp over the past few years. You are having two or three or four practice. Now, a lot of those aren't coming from Eli. It's coming from Painter and Nassib, but still, this secondary is playing extremely well, and you wonder, maybe the slow start for the offense in practice and they're not looking that good has as much to do with playing an ultra-talented defensive secondary as it does the offense maybe not being where it needs to be.
Well, I think it also has to do with the fact that this is a competitive defensive group, John.
Right.
They want to go out there and they want to make a statement in every practice. They're not just going through the reps so that they can show Perry Fuel, hey, there's comfort. And you even brought this up early in the week. The first day that Odell Beckham Jr. returns to practice, what do? They go after him. Yeah. They're like, we're not going to let you have a catch here and there. We're not going to take it easy on you. You're going to have to earn it. Yes, that's part of being a rookie, but it's also the fact that they have pride in how effective they are as a secondary.
And I don't know if this actually did happen or not, but since Monday's practice when he went off, Corey Washington only had one more catch in practice the rest of the week.
Well, I think that has to do with the secondary.
And that was yesterday without pads on. So the 2 days where they had padded practices this week, Corey Washington didn't catch a pass. And I'm sure the secondary was getting a little tired of watching him running around making plays on him, especially when he did it against the ones in practice on Monday.
That speaks to the competitive nature of this team. And once again, I'm not using that intel to tell people that Corey Washington can't be an effective wide receiver.
No, not at all.
But, John, it is another example that once you have a flash here or there, people do start to focus on you. That is not a stretch. And if the Giants' defense is starting to focus on him during practice, you can guarantee that the opposition, such as the Colts, is going to have their eyes on him when he enters the game on Saturday.
No question about it. Two other pieces of news, and these on this on the not-so-good variety. No Odell Beckham Jr. He's only done a few team reps over the course of the week, probably less than 10, I'd say, in terms of full contact with the team. So he will be held out one more week, which is probably the smart thing. Don't run him out there, have him re-pull that hamstring. Then all of a sudden, his rookie season could be in peril. If he goes out there and pulls his hamstring, is out, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, his rookie season could really be, you know, in peril. You're not sure how effective he could be even when he does get back. So they'll keep him out one more week, and they'll plan to play him against the Jets on August 22nd.
You don't want to be put in a position like Prince of Mukamara. Remember, his rookie campaign, he gets hurt, and his rookie campaign wasn't much of a rookie campaign,
it was wasted.
John.
Yeah. Wasted.
So the second year was essentially his rookie campaign. Yeah. You don't want to put Odell Beckham in the same position.
And then finally, Daniel Fells, the tight end that I still think will eventually be the starter on this team, if I had to place a bet, is not going to play, still making his way back from that bone bruise. But again, it doesn't seem like a super serious injury. I would imagine he'll probably be back against the Jets as well.
That's the goal, to get him back out there. Every time Tom Coughlin addresses Daniel Fells, he likes the upside, but he's frustrated right. That he can't continue to improve. So, to me, it's a necessity for him to get back to that Jets game.
And two notes also, Curtis Painter will be the number two quarterback in this game. He'll take all the reps with the twos, play, I imagine, the majority of the second and third quarter. Ryan Nassib will play the fourth quarter. So that'll give Painter a chance to play with better offensive linemen and better wide receivers. And the tight end rotation that Coach Coughlin talked about yesterday will be Larry Donnell and Kellen Davis for most of the first half. And then once again, Lance, I mean, look, we've talked about this with numerous guys over the years, whether it was Travis Beckham or Ramsey's Barden, you know, go down the list. It's do or die time for Adrian Robinson. If this guy doesn't make plays in one of these last three preseason games, he's toast. He's toast.
Well, you played that audio cut and that video cut, I should say, on last night's program.
Oh, you watched
it. Kevin M. Gilbride. That's a telling comment
now
by him.
Keep note, that was from about 10 days ago.
Correct.
So
but still,
it was early in camp, but still.
I mean, if that doesn't light a fire under a player, John, and for the audience that didn't hear the cut, I mean, he basically said, it is show me time for Adrian Robinson.
He said, he was asked, how does Adrian Robinson look? Again, this is from the first week of camp, so things could have changed since then. But he said he's been up and down. He does some things well, he does other things poorly. And if he wants to contribute to the team this year, he's going to have to improve and get more consistent.
You don't hear them saying about Larry Donnell the same thing or Daniel Fells.
Well,
and this is not a rookie campaign for Robinson.
I think there's a level of frustration. Whenever
Absolutely.
You have a guy that has X, you know, talent and he can't play to that talent, you have an issue.
And you have other guys that are in front of you on the depth chart,
right.
Keep in mind. Yes, they don't necessarily wow you by name, but Donnell has stood out in practice. Fells has made some plays in games. He's got competition. It's not as if he's just going to walk in through the door and get this starting gig.
201-939-4513. That's the news. Now let's get to your calls. Let's start with Max in New York. Max, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, Max?
How we doing, Max?
Good, good. I have a couple things. I was just wondering, John, you're usually my injury guy. So I was just wondering, what's the latest on Beeson? As far as Detroit goes, maybe even like the Jets go.
Well, you know what? Right now, I would say the chance of Beeson playing in a preseason game is probably slim to none. He hasn't been cleared to even do individual stuff on the side of practice yet. He's still rehabbing. And I doubt they'd try to play him in the game the same week he gets back on the practice fields. That means the Jets are probably out of the question. I mean, there's a chance that if he gets on the practice field next week, he could play a few snaps in that Patriots game, even though it's the last preseason game. But for everything I'm hearing, the coaches in front office and medical people are pretty happy with his rehab, and their goal was week one. So I got to imagine, I think he'll probably be on the field against the Lions, barring any setbacks, just on based on what I've heard. But we haven't got an update on Beeson in a while, other than people saying he looks good.
Max, the best comparison that I'll throw out with respect to Beeson is when Nix was hurt in that offseason, he got in that last preseason game just for a
few snaps.
Forgot about
that. Good point.
So I could see them maybe saying, you know what, John, go out for a series or two, as John mentioned against the Patriots on the 28th, and then that's it.
Before that to happen, he better be on the practice field next week.
Correct, because Nix did get a practice or two in, I believe, before
correct.
He went in that
you
game.
Know, and again, I would like to see him do some team stuff in practice even before he plays in a preseason game. So in order to get to teamwork, Max, first you have to do individual stuff, and he hasn't started doing that yet.
And I was just wondering, as far as like the tight ends go, do you think they're going to be in a position now where they're going to accept or probably not going to find the guy that's going to be, you know, lightning in a bottle, a surprise? You know, we're probably going to have one of the lesser tight ends in the league, respectively. Do you think that they're going to be in a position where they're just going to say, you know what, none of you are probably going to catch that well, so let's just, you know, accept that and just go for a blocker and see what you get.
Max, I don't think that's how coaches are wired. I don't think you're going to go into a season and say, well, we accept that these guys aren't very good, so we're not going to use them. I think they're going to try to continue to improve these guys. Larry Donnell, frankly, is a better receiver than he is a blocker at this point. If anything, he's been a little disappointing in his blocking ability, and right now he's the starter. So they're going to put the best player out there regardless of what he does well, whoever they think the best player is, and that's where they're going to roll out. They're not going to accept mediocrity. Remember, maybe a decent tight end will get put out on the waiver wire and final cuts on Labor Day weekend. Then all of a sudden you'll bring somebody in. It might take him a couple weeks to work him into the offense, but I would not be surprised if the starting tight end in week 8 is not yet on this roster. That would not be a huge shock to me.
All right, I appreciate it, guys.
All right, thanks for the call, Max. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, what's going on?
Yeah, I was going to ask about the tight ends. And first, which one did you say is the best blocker, like a Howard Cross type?
I would say the most Howard Cross-like tight end would be Kellen Davis. I mean, just to give you an idea, I was watching the team walk out to practice through the hall, which is right outside my office the other day, and Will Beatty was walking next to Kellen Davis. Kellen Davis is bigger than Will Beatty. I mean, he is a monster human being, and so is Howard Cross, if you ever spend any time with Howard Cross. So if you were to pick somebody that is your Howard Cross tight end, it's no doubt about it, Kellen Davis.
And you have to understand, Andrew, also, Kellen Davis comes from a system where he was specifically asked to block last season. The Seahawks had two tight ends. They had Zach Miller. They had Kellen Davis. They ran a number of double tight end formations. Davis was the guy that sat back and blocked. Miller was the one that ran out and caught passes. So he's got that comfort of being a blocker. And getting back to Max's point prior to that, saying that, you know, well, maybe they won't have the star tight end and they'll just settle on the blocker. I think they're going to use a number of double tight end formations, so Davis can be the blocker, and Larry Donnell could go out and do his strengths, which is catch the football. You can get a balance of both worlds between two players.
Good. And speaking of blocking, how do you think the centers look, and who do you think will be the starter?
You know what, Andrew? Actually, the centers to me, and I'm assuming you're talking about Weston Richburg and J.D. Walton, they've been one of the strengths of camp to me. I think the center play has been terrific. J.D. Walton has been, quite frankly, a much better player than I thought he was when he came in here, based on what he had done in Denver before Peyton Manning got there. I mean, wow. J.D. Walton, to me, has been almost a revelation. He probably, to me, besides Justin Pugh, has probably been the best player on that offensive line, and we probably haven't talked enough about him. And I think Weston Richburg has been good enough. I still believe he'll be the starter at right guard week 1 regular season. That's my feel for it.
And my final question, high flying. I came up with the term the Terminator. The Terminator, Thurman versus Cruz. That's exciting. And who do you think is getting so far in camp the better of that competition, that battle? Thanks, guys.
You got it, Andrew. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. They've been going up against one another each and every day in practice, and it's been extremely competitive. Early on, Victor Cruz wasn't catching much of anything.
And he's, frankly, still not catching much.
He did have some activity over the last few days, but not nearly enough to make up for the drought very early in training
camp. Thurman's winning that battle.
Absolutely. I would wholeheartedly agree.
No question about it.
And he's bringing that aggressiveness over from Seattle, which is what everybody anticipated.
And look, everyone knows what a player Victor Cruz is, so... You know, regardless if it's a new offense or not, the fact that Walter Thurman can do that to a player like Cruz in the slot where he's most effective, I think speaks volumes to the type of player that he is. And I said this earlier in the offseason, Lance, and I'm going to say it again. The Giants got him on a one-year bargain contract. After this year, Walter Thurman's going to get paid.
Deservedly so.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. He's going to get paid. Whether it's here or somewhere else, Walter Thurman's going to get paid.
Well, I really think it depends on how Walter Thurman envisions himself moving forward, John, because he was the third corner in Seattle. He's the third corner here. I mean, I don't know goals long term. Maybe he looks at himself as being an outside corner one day and being one of the top two starters on his respective team.
Well, here's the thing. Remember, you can start being outside corner, and then when they go to three corners, you can move inside.
Correct, absolutely.
I mean, that's what a lot of teams do. The Cowboys start Orlando Scandrick. When they go to three, teams go three wideouts, he plays the slot for them. And a lot of other the top corners do the same thing. So, you know, you're almost to the point now, too. I mean, isn't the third corner basically a starter now?
It is.
I mean, you're playing 80% of the snaps.
Because of the pass-happy league. But I think it really depends on a team if they feel they have strength in the linebacker spot. It varies. It varies from team to team.
And frankly, a lot of times, playing the slot's harder than playing outside. So to me, I haven't seen anything in practice or in games that tells me Walter Thurman can't play outside corner. I haven't seen anything that would indicate that to me. Have you?
No, nothing. And he always talks about the fact that he loves his versatility. He'd be more than comfortable outside. And that's the only reason why I bring it up when you brought up the fact that he's on a one-year deal. It depends on how he sees his role moving forward. I mean, if he's comfortable with the Giants, perhaps he'll re-sign, especially if the team does well this season.
Brian in New York is next at 201-939-4513.
Hi, guys. I just got a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
How many wide receivers do we keep, and who do you think we keep? And I noticed how in the draft we like to stockpile at, like, positions like defensive tackle. Why haven't we done that at tight end, where we're constantly going through a starter year to year? And if our tight ends don't come to the forefront, how much trouble are we in with this new offense?
Well, quite frankly, Jerry Reese has never put a focus on the tight end position the same way he's never really put a focus on the linebacker position on defense when it comes to the draft. It's just something that he hasn't done. I could speak to this year specifically. Both Tom Coughlin, Mark Ross, and Jerry Reese all said at their post-draft press conferences they weren't particularly impressed with the tight ends that came out in this year's draft. So that's why they decided to go away from him this year. And thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We lost Brian there. But So I will say that in regards to the tight ends, especially in this year's draft, they did not like that particular class. And I think they thought A.J. Robinson was a guy they could develop to that they did pick a couple years ago. It just hasn't worked out.
Well, Robinson would be the example that Brian was alluding to in terms of getting somebody young and trying to develop them. That hasn't necessarily followed the script accordingly. At the end of the day, long term, is there a whole great deal of concern? As I brought up on yesterday's program, I think you can get the most out of these guys. And I think if you use a rotation where you just play to their strengths. So if Kellen Davis is your best blocker, then every time you need to run, you make sure Kellen Davis is on the field. Larry Dinnell, you need a big catch, you put Larry Dinnell on the field. Now, the counter argument to that is, well, wait a minute, Lance. Now the Giants are going to be too predictable because teams are going to know when this tight end is on the field, they're going to run that play. That doesn't mean they can't be effective, though.
Hey, here's the bottom line. Look, these guys can do both. They might not be great at it, but they can do both. I mean, look, Larry Dinnell, even if he's your quote-unquote receiving tight end, guess what? He's going to have to block. Kellen Davis is going to have to go out for a couple passes. Will they be great at it? No. Is it going to hurt the offense not having a dynamic tight end? It's not going to help it. But I'll tell you what, not having a dynamic tight end puts even more pressure on the wide receiver spot. It puts more pressure on Reuben Randle. It puts more pressure on Odell Beckham Jr. to come in here and being a productive rookie wide receiver. You got to have multiple weapons on offense here, folks.
Well, that's why I like the fact that the running backs are more heavily used in the passing game this season.
It helps.
Because that's something that was not present last season.
201-939-4513. Keith in Kentucky. Keith, you're up next, bud.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's up, Keith?
Questions.
Yeah.
I just got a couple questions. I don't know if it's bad journalism or if it's true. I heard they was checking out Henry Hanoski in the tight end position. Is that true?
Yeah, you know what? Lance and I talked about that earlier in the show. He mentioned doing some tight end stuff, but I've never seen him line up on the line of scrimmage for a game. Tom Coughlin said post-practice, we will not line him up on the line of scrimmage. So you can't be a tight end if you don't line up on the line of scrimmage. So, Keith, I think that's – look, Henry Hanoski said it. I heard the words come out of his mouth, and that's what Paul Schwartz reported. So I'm not putting the onus on Paul Schwartz here, but I do think it's a bit of a non-story.
And then Coughlin follows up later on saying that he doesn't foresee him lining up at the line of scrimmage. So, Keith, to answer your question, I think we're really getting mixed signals. The player is selling you one thing. The coach is shutting it down on the other end.
It's true.
Right, right. Well, I was thinking if that was true, I think that would be more or less the Giants trying to keep their best players on the 53-man roster. You know, if they can keep both fullbacks and maybe two tight ends, maybe Kellen Davis and Larry Donnell, you know. I think it can work. Like,
DeMarco
Finley. DeMarco Finley wasn't the best. He wasn't the best blocker, you know. But in Ben McAdoo's system or the Packers system, it worked, you know.
Yeah, but you can't only keep two tight ends. You can't just keep two tight ends. You got to have three tight ends on your roster. You have to. And here's the thing, and I had this argument with somebody. This has become a thing where people want to keep both fullbacks. I don't get it. Let me ask you this for a second, Keith. What do Hanoski and John Connor do differently that would warrant both guys being on this roster? What's the difference between the two guys?
Well, one run block's better than the other.
They're both fine. They're both good enough.
But I like the way Connor blocks on short yardage, and Henry Hanoski, and you also need insurance on Henry Hanoski.
All right, well, Keith.
Need insurance.
All right, Keith, question number two. If the Giants, let's say, run 80 offensive snaps per game, how many of those 80 snaps do you think the fullback's even on the field?
You're right about that.
What,
I mean, 20? I can't argue about that.
What, 20?
Yeah.
So I can't have two players that play one position that are both going to take up roster spots when you only use the position 20 times a game. It's hard for me to get put up a second roster spot for that.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I understand that. And I got one more question.
Yeah.
Okay, in the wide receiver position, I want you and Lance to both give me who's going to stay on this team. Because I don't think, even though Holiday is injured and he ain't showed us nothing, but he does have a resume. And I believe we will need that guy. With Odell Beckham having a hamstring issue, because I don't want Ruben Randall back there. But I want y'all to give me all six wide receivers. Who do y'all think? Just right now, you know, just what we got right now. And I'll take the answer off here, man.
Great. Thanks for the call, Keith Bishop. By the way, Brian asked that question, too, about the wide receivers. I forgot
Correct.
That he asked
it's been a
it.
Popular topic.
I think they do keep six, not five. I think your top three are obvious. Cruz, Randall, Beckham Jr., all on the team. I'd be shocked if Jarrell Jernigan wasn't on this roster. I know that might make some fans happy, make some fans unhappy, but to me, he's been the clear third wide receiver throughout camp. I can't imagine them not putting him on the roster. I've been a naysayer on the Manningham signing since it happened. I think I've proven out to be more right than wrong in that regard. Now, he could turn it on the next two or three weeks and maybe change some minds, but I think if they were making the roster now, I don't think Manningham's on the roster.
Very shaky. He had a nice catch yesterday in practice, but a lot of drops as well.
Yeah, I would say you have the top four that I mentioned. And boy,
you can make a case for everybody else, to be honest.
I wanted to put Trindon Holiday on this roster. I know Lance certainly does.
Absolutely.
But the guy's got to get on the field, and he's got to practice this week to play in that final preseason game to make this roster. I would love to have Corey Washington and Trindon Holiday be the fifth and sixth guys and have Marcus Harris go on the practice squad. I think that worked great. I think that'd be fantastic. I just don't know if Trindon Holiday is going to be healthy enough to earn a spot on the roster. So I think right now, if I had to guess the six, it'd be my top four, which I mentioned. Then I think you go Corey Washington and Marcus Harris. I think that's your six.
I would agree with you. I think Trindon Holiday is on the bubble right now. He's got to get out and prove it. Coughlin's been frustrated. To me, what's been stunning, John, there's been so much frustration over Beckham's hamstring injury. Holiday, I mean, why is this lingering much longer than Beckham?
I think it was a bigger
pull. It's amazing.
Must have been a bigger pull.
Well, apparently, but, you know, remember, I mean, they got to see something out of him.
Remember, he tweaked it, thought it was no big deal. They went out practice the next day, and then he pulled it. And that's what you're trying to avoid
with Beckham,
with Odell Beckham Jr.
The only other wild card wide receiver that I'll throw out, and I don't foresee him being included in the
sixth
round.
Preston Parker?
Correct. Given the fact that in preseason games, John, his versatility and punt return could be a valuable asset.
Because right now, who is the punt returner? I think it's a fair question. I mean,
you
we know
can't
who the
say
kick,
Beckham is the guy right
we
now.
We know who the kick returner is. It's going to be
Quinton Demps.
Demps.
Yeah.
All right? But who's the punt returner? Marcus Harris has done it a little bit. They tried Charles James back there, but muffing a punt in the preseason certainly didn't help his chances. Jarrell Jurdigan's done it before, but Lord knows he can't catch the ball consistently, so he's not going to be the guy. And you said, how can you put Odell Beckham Jr. back there right now when he's not healthy? But honestly, right now, if Holiday doesn't make this team, I think Beckham's the guy, especially if he's going to be your third or fourth wide receiver. You can use a guy like that on punts, assuming he gets and stays healthy.
Assuming that he shows that he has some durability. Yeah. Holiday is on the bubble. If Holiday gets out there for the next two preseason games, and that may be a stretch because he's got to get out there on the practice
field. Better practice Monday.
Then maybe the conversation changes with respect to a Marcus Harris potentially or a Corey Washington. Right. But until Holiday does something, he's not moving in front of those two because Harris and Washington have at least shown you more in the durability and consistency department.
201-939-4513. Owen's up in Toronto. Owen, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys.
What's up, Owen? Doing well.
Not much. All right, so quickly, I don't know if you guys had talked about this, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating. I'm pretty sure that this must have come up already, but, you know, I really feel bad for David Wilson. I mean, I don't know what to say about the guy. I mean, I heard the neck injury again and that it might be ending his career. And I was just wondering if you guys know if that's true. Is his career actually done or is it just another?
No, it is. I mean, look, he's been the doctors have recommended Owen that he not play football again. And David Wilson, I think, has done the prudent thing. He's not going to fight that diagnosis. And his career is over. I think mentally he's moved on. He actually was at practice the other day, watching it from the sideline. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't quite remember which day this week. Kind of, you know, and he was smiling on his face. He was in great spirits, and he seems to be handling it pretty well, at least on the surface.
Yeah, I mean, he might be handling well. That's just really tough. He's a young kid, and
yep.
I just feel really bad. But, okay, I have a question and a comment. My comment about the receivers, I 100% agree with you on the top three. Odell Beckham Jr., Cruz, and Ruben Randle. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. I mean, most people wouldn't. I would say this guy hasn't been playing well in practice, but I would say just because off of what I've seen he's done in New York before, and even though he's been injured, I would say Manningham, obviously he has not been doing very well, and I can't argue that at all. I just think that if he can stay healthy, he's an exciting player. We've seen it before in the past when he was on the Giants. Who knows? He's getting a little bit older now, but, you know, I like him. But then you got Jarrell Jurnigan, like you said. Trindon Holiday is a very talented player. Been injured so far, but I mean, I like all six of those guys, to be honest, like you were saying, but
now remember, it's not just age with Manningham, it's the knee. You know, he had that reconstructed knee surgery 2 years ago, and while structurally the knee might be sound, Lance, he doesn't seem to have a lot of confidence in it.
No, and even when speaking to the media, a little hesitant in terms of how he answers questions. So that, to me, sends mixed signals. That's the one thing that I haven't been in love with in terms of Manningham, his demeanor.
He doesn't sound
correct.
Like he
doesn't
believes
sound,
he's 100%.
You don't see the confidence
out
of Manningham.
I agree 100%.
When he's even off the field, that's concerning to me.
And usually players will be overly confident, overly optimistic, but he's almost the opposite. He's talking himself down rather than talking himself up.
And he doesn't want to talk about the past. People bring up about all his heroics. Does not want to address that. So that's why I'm a little leery in terms of you bringing up Manningham and putting him somewhat over Jurnigan, because if you look at what have you done for me lately, even though Jurnigan doesn't have a great resume, right now I'd have more confidence in putting Jurnigan out there as an every down wide receiver more so than Manningham.
Yeah, because Owen, all we can go by is what happens in practice and what happens in these preseason games. And right now, and since the beginning of camp now, it's been consistent for, we've had 4 weeks of practices now. When the Giants run out their first team offense and they run three wide receivers, Jarrell Jurnigan's on the field. Manningham is never on the field, and I think that's very telling.
Okay, so that I agree. I guess I could agree with that. I just know Manningham from the past. I don't know much about Jurnigan. That's all. That's the reason I'm saying that.
No, that's fair.
I know the name, but anyways, my last question. Odell Beckham Jr. I'm not much of a college guy. Like before the draft, I'd heard his name. I knew we were hoping to get a wide receiver. I was hearing that he was probably a top five receiver in the draft. My question to you guys is, obviously you have no idea if this guy's going to pan out, but if, like, comparing, like, because I know he's a talented receiver and he has talent, everybody's saying, but if you were to compare him to a player in the league, obviously this is not, like, very difficult because you can't just say, oh, this guy's going to become this, but if you were to compare him to a guy based on his weight, his height, just, you know, how you see him as a receiver, who do you think you'd compare him to?
In terms of a player on the field, I mean, I think you would hope he'd give you the type of explosive ability of a DeSean Jackson, even though he's probably a little bit bigger. Frankly, he's not that dissimilar to Victor Cruz, somebody that's on the team. He's probably a little bit overall better top speed than Victor, though, I'd say.
The other play that I would throw out, at least if you use the Packers as a comparison, Randall Cobb, or at least maybe try to get him in that role. Now, once again, I'm not putting him on a pedestal. Don't misinterpret my words, but if they can get that type of usage out of him, I'm not saying the duplication of productivity, the usage in open space, short passes, can get past defenders, I think that would be an extremely big bonus for them.
You know what? If he's any of those guys, I think he's going to have a hell of a career. And maybe not this year, he's going to be turned into one of those guys, but if in the next 2, 3, 4, or 5 years, whatever it is, if he can turn into any of those guys, that would be amazing. And I'm really looking forward to the season. I think it's going to be a good season, a turnaround for Eli Manning in the offense. And I'll be calling in soon, guys.
Thanks, Thank Owen.
You. All right, Owen, appreciate
good
the phone call.
Good to hear from Owen in a while since last season, I don't think.
It's always good to hear from the usual suspects.
939-4513.
Before we go back to the lines, there are some tweets coming in. This was an interesting one. I'm surprised. Usually Shakes calls in. Now he's turning to Twitter. This is actually from his show's account, The Shakedown, at BBN Uncensored. And this is an interesting question. I was looking up the rules just to refresh my memory. His question is, do the Giants cut Adrian Robinson or put him on the practice squad if he doesn't make the 53-man roster? Now, you have to accrue 6 games, John, to be considered having 1 full season in the NFL. He only played in 3 games over the course of 2 years. But does the fact that he's been in the league 2 years, that's what I'm trying to get clarification.
No, I believe in the third year you could still be a practice squad player.
So based on those numbers, they technically could put him on the practice
squad.
Are
you sure he's only been on the field for 3 games?
You're telling me he was dressed for other games and just didn't get in the game? I don't recall that.
Might have, or he just didn't have any stats.
Yeah, I'd have to look up the numbers very closely.
And I don't know where we would find that, to be honest with you.
In terms of what games he dressed and didn't play, boy, usually he wasn't even dressing.
I mean, last year he only dressed in 2, right? Did he dress in any of his games?
I don't
as a
remember
rookie?
Him dressing much at all. All right, we'd have to look that up. Right, it's
I'm
a great question, though.
Send
I haven't really thought about
send
that.
Send a quick email here. Let me see if I can
to
get
see whether or not he's
show.
Eligible.
Yeah.
I mean, the big question is, did he accrue a total of 6 games over the course of 2 seasons? Just to catch you up with the rules, a player is eligible if he does not have an accrued season of NFL experience. Players gain an accrued season by being on the active roster for at least 6 games. If you go by the number of appearances that Adrian Robinson has had over the course of 2 years, it's just been 3 games. This is more rules regarding the practice squad. If a player has 1 accrued season, they can still be practice squad eligible if they were on the 45-man active game day roster for less than 9 regular season games. So he may apply even based on that rule as well.
Well, no, remember, he was on the active game day roster
active
or the 53?
Active game day roster, the 45-man active game day roster for less than 9 regular season games.
Huh.
So that would be, once again, determining which ones he dressed and which ones he officially was not active. Because, once again, as you mentioned, you can be active, but you have no stats. They may not necessarily put you down in the stat chart as a game played. That's right. Why it's very tricky to determine, indeed, if the 3 appearances was the only 3 games that he truly dressed for.
It's interesting. I'm not sure.
But it is a good question. That's why I just wanted to throw it out there. Get you thinking this morning. And John Schmuck is still pondering. This is good. Look, Shake's keeping John on his toes. Normally,
well,
you know, John's confident with an answer. I'm impressed.
Here's a question,
uh-oh,
though. At what point do you say, we've seen enough? I mean, 3 seasons, he still can't earn his way onto the 53. Do you want him on the practice squad?
Hey, that's a great comment, but I would say given the unpredictability of this group, injury concerns,
you probably
as a
want,
security
you probably
blanket.
Want a tight end on the practice squad. Why not him, right? I guess. That makes sense.
I mean, unless you want to put Grimble on the practice squad, John, Grimble has yet to be healthy.
No, sorry.
So, I mean, if you had the choice between Grimble or Adrian Robinson on the practice squad, I would personally take Adrian Robinson.
Grimble has hamstrung himself right off this roster is what he's done.
There you go.
Dude, if you're an undrafted rookie and you don't play, And that's one of the reasons. Look, Kelce Quarles looked like he had a pretty serious, what was it, ankle sprain or knee sprain? I think he had an ankle sprain, right, Kelce Quarles?
Ankle.
And he only sat out, what, half a week? And he was back on the field on Tuesday making plays again? Got right back out there, man. I could tell the coaching, he's got a little something to him, Kelce Quarles.
Got a little
I think Shakes picked a good one with him. You know, there's a couple bandwagons he jumped on. I think he jumped on a good one with Kelce
Quarles.
Well,
let's not crown him yet. Time will tell. But you're right. The energy, off-the-field demeanor, that's
but
a positive.
But I still think that it's going to be tough to fit him on the 53, and you hope you can sneak him onto the practice squad. But with some teams out there desperate for defensive linemen, like teams in the division, like the Dallas Cowboys, it might be tough to sneak him onto the practice squad.
And they tend to pay attention to other teams' rosters within the division.
And frankly, I think no matter who you cut, whether it's Marcus Kuhn, whether Jay Brown was obviously not going anywhere, a third-round pick, or Kelce Quarles, I think both those guys would have interest from other teams.
You know what?
And Kuhn, I don't think, is practice squad eligible.
No,
he's been active
Kuhn,
for
I don't believe
games.
It. Yeah, he was definitely more active because by the time he tore his ACL that first season,
he'd already
had about like
four
seven
games.
Or eight.
Yeah.
I think he had even more than that.
Really?
I mean, it was much later in the season.
Whatever the case might be, he is not practice
Correct.
Squad eligible.
Right? I think that the best way to describe the Quarles situation compared to the Holiday and Grimble situation is he got some of Charlie's Annika. And he rubbed it on the ankle, okay? See, we remember what Charlie throws out here.
Unfortunately, we do.
That's what it was all about.
And he's on the line, by the
Speaking
way.
Speaking of, I'm excited. What a great transition.
I vetoed that. No more talk about that, by the way.
Okay, hey, we don't need to get into the medical X's and O's, but maybe there was some rhyme or reason to it. That's all I'm going to say.
201-939-4513. Dave in White Plains. Dave, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, buddy? How you guys?
How are you, Dave?
I just got a quick point. You guys touched on the special teams a little bit with the Trenton Holiday and a couple of those receivers trying to see. I think that is the most important key issue that we have when it comes to this team because the defense is going to be the defense. That defense has been pretty solid. Our offense, we're not going to know how good they're going to be till game five, I'm thinking. But the special teams, to me, is really key because the special team really helps the field position with the offense, puts the offense in a good field position. And unless we figure out who's going to really be our returner, the offense is going to struggle just as much. I mean, that's just the way I feel. I mean, I don't know if you guys – who's going to be the returner or the kick returner? I mean, you guys are speaking about Demps. I still believe Jernigan, I don't see him back there.
Well, look, Dave, I could tell you straight up, Quinton Demps is going to be the kick returner. This coaching staff in front office views him as one of the best kick returners in football. And quite frankly, the numbers and stats really do add evidence and credence to that. He's been one of the best guys in the league in terms of returning kicks. So he will be your kick returner. Punt returner, I think, is one that's a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think they should keep Trenton Holiday regardless. Even if he doesn't make the field, just keep him, sneak him in somewhere because the guy just – You know, if he ever gets on that field, I mean, assuming he does, hopefully sometime in the near future, we should his resume, as you guys touched on, is really incredible. And we haven't seen anything like that. We haven't had anything like that. And I don't even know if we ever did.
Well, but I would love the problem with Trenton Holiday is that while his resume as a returner is great, there's a reason the Broncos basically took him off the 53-man active roster on game days or the 45-man active roster on game days late last year because he fumbled the football. And he needed to prove to the Giants that he could hold on to the football this offseason. And frankly, because of the hamstring, he really hasn't had the opportunity to prove that.
I see. So we got – all right. I mean, we got Demps there. Let's see what this guy can do. I mean, obviously, they believe in him.
Well, it's not even a matter of just believing in him. I mean, I think he's got enough of a resume. If you look at what he did with the Chiefs, he's had some explosive returns. So I think that based on what he's put on the resume and shown on tape, they believe that they can insert him here and he could do some damage. Unfortunately, he hasn't had a great deal of opportunities because one kickback after another has been a touchback throughout the first two preseason games. So I think the goal is, and maybe the fan base will get a little bit more excited like yourself, if he actually gets a return or two Saturday night against the Colts.
Now, how's our special teams looking as far as depth-wise and how they're out there, because I'm really concerned about that. I think that's a key in this. I just, like, I know we got a lot of athletes and we got some speed on the field, but how's that coming along as far as the special teams is concerned? Have they pretty much know or have an idea on who's really going to be in the special teams and who's going to make that team as far as the special teams is concerned? Do they have a?
Well, I don't think that anything is solidified on special teams. If there's major question marks, it's probably on that special teams unit. And the reason I say that, a lot of the fourth and fifth guys that are on the depth chart, whether it be on defense or a wide receiver, for example, they have to prove that they can be consistent on special teams. For example, a Marcus Harris, a Corey Washington. You know, they're not just fighting to prove that they could do it as a wide receiver. They're fighting that they could be a consistent weapon on special teams.
And as a little preview to the pregame radio interview that'll be on WFAN, or rather on WCBS 880 tomorrow night, pregame starts at 6:05, 7:05 kickoff against the Colts. I interviewed Corey Washington, and one of the questions I asked him, Corey, what do you need to do to make this football team, first thing out of his mouth, be a great special teams player? So these guys understand that's what's going to get them on this roster.
And I would say the same thing with defensive players as I was talking about. You know, a guy like Herzlick, for example.
Like Charles James.
There you go. You know, they have to show that they could be impact
Taylor,
players.
Taylor, Nat Burhe, all those guys are going to have to play specials.
That Nat Burhe, I'm really interested about that guy. I mean, he seems like he's got a little something special. I mean, I don't know how his cover skills are, but...
Well, that's the trick. That's the trick.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. Look, they like Burhe. He's physical. He's as they joke. They call him the missile because he heat six on targets. But his speed and coverage to play center field, I think, is somewhat of a question mark at this point. It was a good question from Avery at TQManAF on Twitter. How is Israel Adonijé practicing? What group was he practicing with? He's been with the twos and the threes, kind of rotating in and out. And he's been a guy. He's been a guy that's been in the league for Lance like 10, 11 years. He's had production in this league. He's had seasons with more than five sacks. He's played with a couple different organizations. I know Bob Papa thinks he's got a really good chance of making this team. He's a big Israel Adonijé fan. And I think if the Giants decide to keep five defensive ends, he's probably the fifth guy. I'm not going to lie. But I think with the depth of tackle, it's going to be difficult for this team to keep five defensive ends this year.
Well, because you can make the argument that there could be potentially six defensive tackles that they could retain. But Israel Adonijé, you're talking about a polished veteran who doesn't need a great deal of adjustment time.
He knows what he's doing.
So that's why I think there's appeal there. He's been with the Bears. He's been with the Lions. He's been a fairly consistent statistical guy, and he's been able to get to the quarterback. And the first preseason game, listen, I'm not crowning him, but he tripped up Landry Jones. Yes, it's not Ben Roethlisberger, but to do that in your first preseason game, John, after you joined the team, I think that says something about his potential impact.
Basically off the street, making plays.
Right there.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Ari in Highland Park. Arlie, you're up next.
What's going on, John?
What's up, Ari? How are you, Ari?
Excellent. Thank you. I got a couple points I want to touch on, if that's okay.
Sure.
First off, you guys need to talk some sense into Anita. She's been a little Debbie Downer the whole time. I heard her yesterday on the ESPN radio just doing the same thing she did on BDKL last week, just about how the guy is falling for the Giants. She's so nervous. And, I mean, how bad should the season be?
She was on ESPN Radio 1050. What was she on, Ari?
Yeah, ESPN Radio with Ryan Rucco and the other guy. What's his name? I forget his name.
Yeah, I'm honestly not even sure who's hosting Rucco anymore since Stephen A. Smith
is a
big
back
over to Sirius. Who's now a co-worker with Lance over at
Sirius. Dave Rothenstein. I think that's what it was. Dave Rothenstein.
Oh, Rothenberg.
Rothenberg.
The guy with the
Rothenberg.
Yeah.
Rothenberg. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of questions on the offense, but this defense, as she admitted herself, looks spectacular. It could be top five, could be, you know, unreal. If JPP plays out of his mind, you know, this defense could be unreal.
If JPP is a vintage year, Ari, the Giants could, in my opinion, be a top five defense, but I don't think there's more than a 10 to 15% chance JPP is the 2011 JPP.
That's fine, but even so, with this secondary and linebacking corps, I think it could be a top 10 defense as it is. Which, you know, in my mind, that puts us at a four, especially with Eli as our quarterback. 7, 9, 8, and 8 is the four. No.
Yeah, I don't see them.
Yeah, so she's
winning
know,
less
the
than
she's
seven
talking,
or eight
like,
games.
We're going
I mean, that to
4 and 12. Exactly. So I mean, look, if the offense. The offense could be bad, but it could be also great. Like, you know, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. And if those questions do get answered, you know, this guy's a winner.
Well, all right, I'll be honest. I don't foresee a situation this year where the offense is going to be great. Only because I don't see the number of weapons for Eli Manning. You know, I think Rashad Jennings is a good, solid running back. I'm not sure if he's an all-pro. You know, the tight end position we've talked about a bajillion times. Other than Victor Cruz, there isn't a proven wide receiver on the roster. So I don't think you're looking at a top 10 offense here. But I think if things go well and they really get into this offense quickly, there's no reason this offense can't rank somewhere between 12 and 15. I don't think that's out of the question at all.
Exactly. And for me, the only question that needs to be answered well is the offensive line. If the offensive line is good, Eli will be good. And Eli being good makes all his players around him good.
That's
all there is to it. So, you know, yes, there are a lot of questions. Tight end, you know, who knows. Receiving core, if Beckham can get out on field. But they're good enough that if the O-line is good, everybody's going to be good. So that's my first point.
Well, if the O-line is good, didn't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue. They'll also have a running game, you assume, and that's a big plus for you.
Yeah, and frankly, exactly. I think that's a big thing. I think if this running game can carry a lot of the load this year, it would go a long way to helping this offense out and, frankly, helping the defense out by keeping them off the field a little bit.
Right. So now what I want to say is that this preseason game coming up is going to be very telling to me because last year, if you remember, we played the Colts. Was the first game we played, you know, and actually a good team. And they just ran over us. They destroyed us. at least the first team. They, you know, I think Eli threw a couple picks, and you know, they put up 14 points within the first two series. It was over. So, I don't think we need to necessarily the first team necessarily to beat them, but they need to compete with them. They need to be, you know, it needs to be a good game through the entire first half. And if they do that, then I have no problem, you know, I'm not worried at all going into the season. If they don't do that, then maybe I'll start to get a little bit nervous. But still, you know, it's still way too early to panic, you know. If God forbid they start the season 0-4, 0-5, you know, then maybe start to panic a little bit. But otherwise, I think we're good. So.
All right, Ari. Thanks for the call, man.
All right. Thanks,
all right, Ari. Thanks
so
much.
Hey, look, and the Giants are going to have to start pretty quick this season. You want to get the bad taste out of your mouth of 2013 for one. And Lance, number two, the early part of this schedule has more winnable games than the middle part of the schedule. So, you know, if we talked about this before. With that middle part of your season going to Philly, to Dallas, Colts, to Seattle, then 49ers and Cowboys at home, those are six very difficult games. Heading into that stretch, you better be minimum 3-2. You'd like to be 4-1 if you can. That's the way I look at it.
You have to take care of business early. And forget how difficult the schedule is later in the season versus the beginning of the season. Just look at last year as an example, John. They dug themselves in too deep of a hole, and they actually played pretty good football in the second half, and it still wasn't enough.
Didn't matter.
So that's your example right there. You don't have to worry about the ins and outs of this year's schedule. The fact that they started off slow, shot themselves in the foot, recovered, but it wasn't enough. That's a lesson in itself. You cannot afford to get off to a slow start.
201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Let's go to Will in the Bronx. Will, you're up next, pal.
Hey, John. How are you today?
Will, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. You know, I'm in the Bronx, but, you know, I'm only doing some reconnaissance work up there. I'm from Brooklyn.
Ah, good man. where in Brooklyn, Will?
Originally from East New York, Brooklyn, and then Crown Heights, and, you know, I've been all around Brooklyn.
East New York, you don't mess with East New York. That I know.
No, sir. Hey, John, I got a question for you, man. First off, can we bump the volume up a little bit on the mobile app? Because it comes across kind of low sometimes. But my question is, with regard to David Wilson, I wanted to call in a couple of days.
Yeah, go ahead.
Huh?
No, I said, okay. In terms of the volume, we can work on that. What else you got for us?
David Wilson, the fact that he retired, does that give us, like, a compensatory pick in next year's draft or anything like that?
I was wondering
about that.
Someone actually just asked a question on Twitter about that. Was that you?
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, that's funny. We actually got a Twitter from a question on Twitter about
that
asking
well.
Just that. I was going to answer that later on in the show. The Twitter question, I'll give him the credit, from @GiantsUp. I don't believe you get compensatory draft picks, even in case of an injury situation. I'll double-check on that. I don't think you do. But as far as I understand, the Giants will not receive any compensation for the David Wilson injury.
So what's the criteria for getting compensatory picks?
Basically, it's losing players in free agency. Basically, what they'll do, they'll take a look after the season at the players that a team signs in free agency and the players that the team lose in free agency, and they will then decide whether or not they think the team is a net gain or a net loss. And the formula that they use to determine it isn't published. The league talks about how far they've mentioned a couple of different things in terms of how they figure that out, how far the team goes that signs the free agent, not only their regular season performance, but also their postseason performance, things of that nature. So there's a lot of things that go into it, but it's really kind of a mystery and an internal league issue exactly how they determine
and it. And the reason why they don't want to give out that formula is because they don't want teams determining their moves in free agency, assuming they're going to get X amount of compensatory picks. So that has to do with it. To add to what John mentioned, this is at least what is thrown into the formula. They take into consideration the salary of the player that was lost, the number of awards the player has won, the skill ranking of the player for his position, and the amount of impact the loss of the player will have on the team. Those are some of the factors that go into the rationale.
Got it. I'm sorry about that, Lance. I didn't realize you were, I just came on.
It's okay. I mean, when you only directed your questions towards John, I said, all right, you know, I'll rest the voice. No problem. I'll take a few minutes off. Not an issue. I wasn't insulted. It's all right.
Hey, Will, the bottom line is that people jump in and out of the show all the time, so repeat questions are fine because, like you, someone might not have been listening earlier, so it's no problem at all.
Yeah, okay. No problem, guys. Thanks for taking my call, John and Lance.
Anytime.
You got it, Will.
Anytime someone from Brooklyn can call in.
You know, I was going to say, perhaps the reason why the volume is not high enough on the mobile app is because he's in the Bronx.
Oh,
if he was in East Brooklyn, East New York tends to have a little bit better reception.
Well,
we
obviously broadcast better in Brooklyn.
There you go.
You know, better
just
infrastructure, the whole thing. Of course.
That's what it is.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Charlie up in Portland, Maine. What does Chuckles have for us today? Charlie,
a man of few words this morning.
Charlie.
Oh, you're killing us, Charlie.
Wow. This has never happened before.
What, do we throw him off with the Annika reference?
I don't know.
I'm a little disappointed.
What happened to Charlie? Maybe the infrastructure up in Maine isn't good.
Apparently.
Maybe one of the lumberjacks cut down the tree that was holding up the phone line or something like that. All right, let's get rid of Charlie. If he calls back, we'll put him back up. But, Charlie, what happened, buddy?
It's been a rough morning.
I know.
He must be attending, you know, to other issues or something like that. Or he's devising a new scheme for the Giants to use some medical flower of some
sort.
By the
way, Charlie's a DJ in his spare time.
Oh, I did not realize that. Wow.
Charlie,
you found out some details.
Well, Charlie actually sent me some recommended songs to play at the wedding. He sent me, like, a whole email with, like, 75 songs.
Did you take his advice?
I took some.
You did? Yeah. Okay.
A lot of the work was already done, so a lot of the things he actually suggested were stuff I already had in there. But Charlie probably got me to, especially some of the older stuff for, you know, some of the older folk at the wedding. You know, songs from like, you know, he gave me like a whole list. Songs from the 50s, songs from the 60s.
Oh, he gave you some old school
stuff. Charlie did a really good job helping.
He's an equal opportunist.
Yeah,
he doesn't discriminate, which is nice to hear.
Excellent job. 201-939-4513. Lost Abdul? Let's go to Chris in Baltimore. Chris, you're up, pal.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How y'all doing today?
Doing well, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I got a question. I was listening yesterday. I just jumped on a little late today. Listening yesterday, and there was some comments made about Beedy and what type of options we had at the beginning of the season to get another left tackle to shore things up. I was one of those people that said that we needed a skill plan in order to open up some of the new things that we wanted to do in the run game. You know, so I felt like Beckham was a good choice, especially since we had trouble scoring last year. And, I mean, you know, to pick up Zach Morris would have been a pretty good pick. But I also felt like
Zach
it wasn't going to help us. Zach Martin, yeah.
Saved by the bell.
Now, I got to be honest. I'm not sure Zach Morris would be a real good offensive lineman. Maybe.
Terry would have helped us out, man.
maybe A.C. Slater could have gotten it done at guard. That's about
well,
it.
Well, in fairness, he could use that big cell phone to knock out a defensive lineman or two. You never know.
Could you imagine using that phone for, like, the coach's
exactly.
Job?
There you go.
It'd be tremendous.
I mean, at this point, I'll take anything. If Screech can throw in a helmet and pull around and block somebody, it'll work. You know what I mean?
I hear you, man.
Well, no, what I was asking was, I was saying, like, you know, it was a lot of pretty high-dollar left tackles that were out there this year. And I was kind of wondering, how come the Giants, like, if you had Brandon Albert from Kansas City, It was another guy, I believe he was from the Raiders, that was a real high dollar, you know, like, I don't know if they wanted to put that type of money out, but, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel, but, I mean, we need offensive line help, at least not to the point where I believe that it's so bad. I'm still optimistic about what we have, but is the Beckham pick really that bad? I mean, we struggled to perform on the board last year.
I don't think the Beckham pick is bad at all. Look, I realize right now the early returns aren't good. He's been hurt, but... Look, you know me. When the draft happened, Chris, I'm not sure if you listened to the show, I was in favor of taking a guy in the first round that could be a weapon. Because in my opinion, you could get a starting caliber offensive lineman in the second round, which I think is going to end up proving accurate. Because I think Weston Richburg will start for them this year. So,
yes,
to me, it worked out well. Now it's just a matter of Beckham actually becoming that weapon and being that guy that everyone thinks he can be. Look, they need Will Beatty this year to come out and be Will Beatty. They've needed that since the beginning. And you mentioned, why didn't they go out there and spend money on a tackle in the offseason? Do you know why they didn't do that? Because last offseason, they signed Will Beatty to a big money extension for more than $40 million. So they did spend the money on the left tackle. They spent it on Will Beatty. For better or worse, that's who they committed to. Now, if Will Beatty comes out again this year and plays terrible, they can address his contract situation next offseason. But for now, Will Beatty's the left tackle. They're going to war with him for better or worse, and we're going to get a decent feel for it this week in his first preseason game to see what he's got left in the tank.
Right. I mean, I mean, if you really look at McAdoo, what he's done in Green Bay with Jordy Nelson and James Jones, and then they had the addition of Randall Cobb a couple years ago, I mean, those guys aren't – I mean, Jordy Nelson's a track star from Kansas State, but, I mean, those guys aren't really jump-off-the-page attributes, size, and strength. I mean, they're just really, really good receivers. I feel like we have that in Randall and Cruz. To add Beckham will be the third piece, open up that running game some, and that'll take off the pressure. They won't be able to get at Beatty like they would have been last year because we really didn't have anything to throw at him because we were so injury-decimated. So, I mean, I feel like we're still in the bad place, but I just wanted to hear your thought on it, man. They beat him up so bad yesterday, man. I couldn't get through the phones to take up for Beatty, so I'm glad that I got through today.
Hey, look, Chris, bottom line, Beatty's got to prove it. Look, and then Will Beatty, frankly, Will Beatty deserves to get slapped around a little bit for his play last year. He was terrible
just
when he was healthy.
Bit.
So he needs to get better.
Talking about a player that gave up 13 sacks, which is more than any other offensive lineman last season.
That is true, but you know what, guys? I'm still going to defend him. I'm going to have to because he's the only option I got, and I'll take the whole fall. You know what I mean? But, I mean, look at who he's playing against. You had Ware. He played against Peppers last year. He played against he played against the Lions defensive line last year, the Seattle's defensive line last year. I mean, they throw the whole kitchen sink at him nine times out of ten because we were so hurt. We were so interchangeable because of injury last
year. Chris, that's true. But this year, you got to deal with the Lions defensive line again. You got to deal with J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney against Houston.
Oh, my goodness.
You got to deal with Jim Haslett's blitzing defense in Washington twice this year.
Yeah.
You got to deal with the Seahawks defensive line again. You got to deal with the 49ers defensive line. And you got to deal with the Rams defensive line again. So let me tell you, it ain't getting any easier this year for the Giants offensive line.
Not. And some of the teams that did not have good pass rushers last season, for example, the Falcons, to me, have improved their pass rush. Bierman's now healthy after being missed all of last season. So, you know, there's teams that you think are going to be an easy passer, Beatty, and he's still going to be challenged.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see, man. I want to see 65 in the Pro Bowl this year. That'll shut everybody up.
Hey, they'll take that. If that happens, Chris, the Giants and their fan base will be extremely happy.
And frankly, it'll probably mean that they win a decent amount of games this year, too.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, thanks for the call,
guys,
Chris.
I appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I don't even think Slater could play offensive line these days. You've seen him on extra recently? He's lost a lot of weight.
He has slimmed down.
Screech
maybe could be a practice dummy. That's about it. I don't know if he'll even last as the punter in the game.
Remember, Slater was the quarterback for Bayside High. So,
look at this. A little Saved by the Bell trivia this morning. Who knows where this conversation will go?
Led multiple game-winning drives against Valley during his high school days.
Did you chart them like Paul DeTina?
No, I did not.
Okay. You haven't gotten into that.
Well, obviously, and then when Slater, you remember, he got recruited to wrestle at Iowa, so he had to bulk up for that. But now he has lost a little weight since he's gone Hollywood since then. It's a big problem.
He's gone on to bigger and better things.
And Screech's celebrity wrestling, I don't think will...
Is that what he's doing right now?
Well, I mean, he did like 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, nothing can match the early days of Saved by the Bell. I didn't like it, you know, when they brought in
the
college
years,
and all that stuff.
No, like Tory.
But they did have the Saved
by the Bell
episodes
movie. Were subpar.
Yeah.
Subpar.
No, nobody replaces Kelly.
No. No, that is very true.
Let's put it
that
way.
No
nobody.
One
we'll leave it
Kelly
at that
Kapowski.
With an exclamation
that
point.
That is true. There's no doubt about that. Wow. I think we might have agreed on that more than anything in the history of the show.
Yes. I think that's a fair assessment.
201-939-4513. By the way, I am scary with my Saved by the Bell trivia.
I know. That's why I didn't know where this conversation was going to go.
No, it's bad.
I thought we were going to say episode 30, which aired in 1993.
Dude, growing up, Saturday morning, 11 o'clock, Saved by the Bell Channel 4. And then Hang Time with Reggie Theus.
Oh,
a little
boy,
late,
do I
later
remember
years,
that.
California Dreams. I was all over that.
Well, and now they show it early in the morning. Don't they have the
they
episodes
used
on
to.
TBS,
well,
or they stopped
well,
that?
It was on TBS for a while. I think it's off that now. Then it was on E for like 6 months.
E picked it up. Wow,
yeah.
I did not realize that.
But then E got rid of it. Now they put that stupid Kardashian show on in the morning.
What
yeah,
else
I'm
is
so
new.
Interested in that.
See, I used to watch Saved by the Bell early in the morning before going to school.
Yeah, I know, sure.
Instead of the cartoons, you'd watch Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, top quality program.
Oh, absolutely. Set the tone for the day.
939-4513. Final call of the show is Shakes down in Baltimore. Shakes, what's going up?
What's going on, man?
Shakes, by the way, Lance and I have a new theory on your Twitter hand for on your Twitter handle. For people that follow Shakes, he's Shakes Montana. Now, Shakes has told us that it's named after Tony Montana from Scarface. I happen to think that secretly you're a big Hannah Montana fan. Is that true?
No, she my other cousin.
It's a large family. It's an extended family.
I see.
It's a large family. If y'all know hip hop, Fresh Montana is my other cousin.
Oh, okay.
Wow,
there
did
you
not
go.
Know him, Fresh Montana. All right, how do you like that? We got a third one on the list.
And just FYI, real quick, I was a Saved by the Bell dude too. I was watching it Saturday mornings along with you, John.
There you go. See, we're making more connections. That's what we like to say. I would love to say. Do you think Paul Dottino seen one episode of Saved by the Bell, or do you think he was too busy breaking down Giants tape?
I doubt it. He was still looking at Frank Gifford's tape.
Though he would probably be able to break down Slater's arm
angle
mechanism
yeah.
in
yeah,
terms
on
of how
release.
He releases the
yeah,
football.
Probably.
Yeah,
probably.
All over.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he'll be all over.
Oh, yeah.
All over.
What do you got this morning, Shakes?
I wanted to say this about the Beatty thing. If y'all can recall, I was not a big fan of going tackle in the first round.
Yep.
And I still believe that way because of what you said. We invested a first-round pick in Pugh. We gave Beatty $35 million. Beatty's our tackle.
But, Chase, I will say this. I also remember hearing from you 2 years ago, though, and you also weren't that excited about giving Will Beatty that big money extension either.
No, actually, I was. I was. Because
oh, really? Okay, I remembered wrong. My mistake.
No, you know who didn't like that? Farmer didn't like that.
Oh, Mike
Farmer,
didn't like it?
Could not stand the fact that the Giants invested that amount of money in Will Beatty. To this day, he still has a canary over that one. Continue. Did not mean to interrupt, Shane.
No problem. That's my boy, Mike Farmer. Shout out.
Hey, you got to protect your own.
No doubt. But like I was saying, you know, I wasn't a fan of that. And I was a fan when they gave Beatty the money because I felt like it was no other tackles at that time that we would rather have. And he had a great season. Like, at that time, he was rated one of the top pass blocking tackles in the league. So, you know, I was happy we gave him the 35 mil. This is where I think what went wrong with Will Beatty. Again, like he said in the past, once he got that contract, he tried to switch it up and try to really solidify that he was worth that money. He tried to switch up his techniques and everything. So that's one reason why we've seen a struggling Beatty last year. Another reason why is because you said this plenty of times, Lance. They was playing musical chairs next to him at guard. Booth this time, Brew over there that time. Like, I mean, everybody spent time next to Beatty. He ain't had nobody consistently right there next to him. So he had to compensate for this guy and try to do something that, I mean, again, the earlier caller said he had to go against Peppers and Ware and all these other guys. I mean, it was just too much on Beatty. Now, this year, coming in this year, I'm confident in him in a starting role. But just in case, performance-wise or health-wise, something happens to him that we do not like and he cannot play, we don't have a viable backup to say, okay, we're still good.
No, Shakes, and that's fair. And that's fair. They should have done a better job hedging their bets on Beatty. I think they thought Charles Brown was that guy. But from what we've seen in camp so far and in the preseason, he has not played well enough to be that guy. Now, maybe they have a backup plan with Justin Pugh that we haven't seen. He hasn't worked one snap at left tackle all of camp. But, look, that I can't disagree with. I think they needed a little bit of a better backup plan in case Beattie doesn't work out this year.
Yeah, and that's my thing. And Derek went on my show and said, you know, well, maybe we got to start trying Pugh at left tackle just to see what he got. And I think this is the time to start experimenting with that because it's preseason. Nothing counts. So let's see if he can do that. Let's see if he can learn that side of the roster or whatever you want to call it. Even though I know, and I'm a big guy on saying let him stay at right tackle and keep learning that because right now he's just getting his feet wet in that position. But, you know, little plays here and there, maybe a series or something, just to see. I'm with that because I'm not with Charles Brown or James Brewer backing up Beattie. That's what I'm not with.
Well, I would agree. I think the tone of the conversation all offseason, Shakes, has been people are skeptical about Will Beattie. They're overlooking what he did in 2012. They're only focusing on 2013, where the bigger concern should be with what you just outlined, the fact that if Beattie has a setback or gets hurt, how about having a strong insurance policy? And, you know, I thought the Charles Brown signing was a good insurance policy. Yes, he did lose his starting job, but you know what? He still has valuable experience. Unfortunately, now we're learning, Shakes, the reason why he lost his starting job was because a younger Teron Armstead was just more effective, plain and simple.
Yeah,
and then that's what also bothers me, because when we brought him in, I'm thinking to myself, didn't he lose his job to a rookie that was raw?
Yep.
I mean, raw than sushi. It's raw.
Jake,
and you lose
your
job to him?
That's fair.
To him? So that's who you wanna back up, baby? Come on, Jerry. Come on now. Now, that's why I was saying Winston. Let's bring in Winston. Oh, no, it's a reason why he's still around. It's a reason. But Seattle scooped him right up. I'm telling y'all, man, I don't understand the moves that Jerry Reese does sometimes, but he do some questionable moves.
Well, Shakes, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I don't know if you heard yesterday's program. The point that I made about Eric Winston was the fact that Seattle, I thought, was more appealing because they could offer him a starting job day one. Whereas if he came
and
to the
right
Giants,
tackle, by the way.
Correct, because right. They lost Breno Giacomini. So while, yes, it would have made sense for him to come to the Giants and for them to have pursued him, sometimes the player, it's more appealing, the opportunity, more so than who can offer him more money. So I think you at least need to take that into consideration as part of the conversation.
Last thing I want to say about it, what about Richie Incognito? We already bought John Jefferson.
No.
Why not Richie Incognito?
Well,
he's
a guard. Shakes, he's a guard. The Giants are fine on the inside right now. They have too many guys, if anything.
You know, I have no experience at that.
No, I don't think so. He's a guard.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Shakes.
The same with Boone, right?
Yeah,
Boone,
Boone played a little bit of tackle earlier in his career, and an argument can be made for that, but you would have to trade a draft pick and then give him a big contract, which is a high price to pay.
And who's to know that the transition back to tackle is smoothly?
Remember, he'd have to play right tackle, then Pugh would have to move out to left. And, you know, remember, it's a lot easier playing right tackle in this league than playing left. You don't know how good Pugh would be at left tackle either.
No doubt. And I wanted to quickly thank y'all for the coming through on the Hunter Show. And also, earlier you said I had brought out a good question. That wasn't me. That was actually my co-host, J-Rock. So give him
all right, well, we give J-Rock credit, too.
There you go.
My apologies. The both of you doing a good job in terms of testing.
The shakedown.
Yes.
No
all right, Shakes.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
All right.
And you did drop the official Twitter account of their show,
I did,
by the way.
Yeah, see, we do what
nice
we can.
Pump. A couple good, by the way, the Saved by the Bell tweets are flying left and right now. I got people challenging me to trivia contests online. Someone said they actually have the California Dreams full DVD set.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Pretty impressive. Other people are, let's see. And by the way, Bleacher Report, we should point out. Somebody over there must be listening to the
apparently.
Show because literally seconds after the Saved by the Bell conversation, they tweet out a picture of Terrell Owens at Cowboys camp hanging out with Mr. Belding, Dennis Haskins.
Wow, you even have the names of
I told you.
The real-life characters. I'm impressed.
Good.
I've got to find that tweet, but
I
pointed it out.
That would technically
talking.
Be the real-life actor, not the real-life character.
Excuse me, the real-life. Well, you know, character. Now, he could be a character
okay,
in real life. How do we know that?
Here's a little Saved by the Bell trivia for you. And you should
well,
know
I'm
this.
Not as effective as you.
You should
so.
Know this. Mr. Belding's first name in the show.
Richard, isn't it?
Very good.
Okay,
there you go.
See, that I figured
that,
out.
That was a pretty easy one.
I was a little nervous. I didn't know where you were going to go.
No. Now, oh boy, can I remember this even? Oh, shoot. I don't know if I remember his wife's name in the show.
Oh, I definitely don't know. I'd have to look that one up.
I don't remember what it is.
That's a true trivia question. I'm sure you'll get some Twitter responses.
I want to say Judy, but I don't think that's right.
I'll try to look it up to see if we can give you an answer by the end.
No, Becky was... You think Betty? I don't think it was Betty. Becky was the name of the duck that got killed in the oil spill. Told you, I'm good. I know by Saved by the Bell. I kind of a photographic memory as a kid. I remember a lot of that stuff. I'm not anymore. I don't remember anything anymore. But, you know, real life gets in the way. Are you looking it up?
I'm trying to find, yes, the wife.
Is it Becky? You sure? You looked that up?
Yeah.
Oh, so I was right. It was Becky. But Becky was also the duck.
So there you have it.
And so I had one of the actual Giants Twitter question here, but I thought it was funny. Terrell Owens and Mr. Belding.
What time is
camp? I know. Pretty amazing. Let's see here. Avery makes a good point. Arizona had the 6th-ranked defense last year. Don't sleep on them. They did have an excellent defense. It's a good point.
Cardinals, very effective defense.
Yeah.
The problem was the ball just didn't bounce their way for a few games. They won 10 games. I mean, that was a team that was extremely deserving of getting to the postseason.
No question. No question about it. One other quick note I want to make here. Let's see. That was one of the Twitter questions I wanted to bring up that somebody had that was good. Oh, David Carden had a funny line. He goes, Beattie's problems last year were adjusting to his new center of gravity and getting his balance straight because of the bulging wallet in his back pocket, which I thought was funny.
Oh, very clever. I like that one.
That being said, I have confidence he can bounce back to his earlier form this year. So I thought that was a good line.
Well, as long as he puts the money in both pockets, hopefully that will better balance him.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, Avery also threw out on Twitter, we were talking about Adrian Robinson being practice squad eligible. I don't know if you got a response from your source within the organization.
They sent me what the rules are, but they had no comment on that particular player.
Gotcha. Okay. So, well, that just goes to show you.
You mentioned most of the rules. One accrued season, which is 6 games on the active roster. Like you mentioned, they can still be eligible if they were on the active game day roster for less than 9 regular season games. Player can be, and this is the third or fourth one that you did not mention. Players can be eligible for a third practice squad season if their team maintains no less than 53 players on the active inactive list at all times, which means they can never have only 52 guys on their roster.
I don't even know if that ever applied, though. I mean, to
I have no idea
that situation. But Avery was looking at Robinson's numbers, and I think he pretty much echoed the numbers that we threw out. Played in 3 games over the first 2 years, one in 2013, 2 as a rookie in 2012. In 2013, Avery says he was inactive for the season's first 14 games. So that means then he technically did not appear in any additional games that may have been missed in the box score. So I have a feeling it truly is 3 games that he was dressed for, that he was active, and that he actually put stats out there.
True.
That's just my feeling, which means he should be eligible to be on the practice squad. And then again, that determines whether or not the Giants can go down that route. But then the question that John threw out, even if he is eligible, do you feel he's worth hanging on to? And my answer would be, well, if it comes down to him and Xavier Grimble, my answer would be yes, because Grimble has yet to even show that he can stay healthy for more than 2 consecutive days. So I would at least be comfortable putting Robinson on the practice squad. He has comfort in the system, and you could bring him up to the active roster if need be, if you lose another tight end. So there's at least some comfort there compared to the other tight ends that you could turn to put on the practice squad.
Everybody, excellent job on the phones. Excellent job on Twitter. This weekend, you can follow the Giants. The game will be streaming on Giants.com if you're out of the tri-state area. If you're in the tri-state area, stay tuned to WCBS News Radio 880. Coverage begins at 6:05, and then WFAN will join in progress once the Yankee game is over as well. So Lance Metal, Paul Dottino, Jeff Eagles, and myself on the pregame. Paul and I will have the postgame locker room. Then Lance and Jeff will take us the rest of the way. And Chris Carino and Roman Obit will have all the coverage from the booth. Paul Dottino on the sideline. Should be a good day of football and a lot of fun. Learn some more about the New York Football Giants. Now just 3 games away from the regular season. It can't get here fast enough. For Lance Metal, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time on Giants.com.